Hey, first of all, just kind of when you said your dad told you about accepting this award yesterday, how'd your dad ask you, and what was your first reaction?
And he just called me and said, do they want to go to New York or something? And I said, sure, what is it? And he said that it was the Hometown Hall of Famers, the NFL, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and, had been doing this and was going to get around to my grandfather, and that it would be at his high school, St. Francis Prep, and that he was unable to attend, and that he left it up to me.
And
being that he's my dad, and I do what he tells me, I gladly accept it.
And obviously jumped right at the chance.
Well, you know, it's always nice to come to New York, regardless of the occasion. My wife is from right outside of the city in New Jersey. She grew up, so we go there at least once a year to visit her family, and I lived here for 8 years on and off in my lifetime, so I enjoy it.
Okay.
Coming here and experiencing the New York life.
What do you think is the greatest impact Vince made, not just on the Packers, but on the NFL as well?
He set a standard of excellence that I think all coaches and teams and players have been striving for. I won 5 championships in 7 years. In a 7-year span, he was there 9 years. A turnaround team that had gone 1-10-1 the year before he got there, and probably the greatest achievement was to win 3 championships in a row, which in the playoff era, no team has done. A lot have won 2, but no one was able to win that 3rd one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that achievement level, I think, that they're all chasing, and so I think that accomplishment in and of itself is something that everyone can look to who's in professional sports.
Is it still kind of surprising to you that he still comes up in conversation? Seeing as how the Packers, he didn't coach them until since in the 1960s.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that to this day is one thing that I'm surprised at. You would think over time that he would fade from memory. He died in 1970, like you said, the Super Bowl. That second Super Bowl was the last game. He coached. He was the general manager the next year, then coached the Redskins for 1 year plus preseason before he died in September. And the fact that he still is held in such high regard and referred to, and to me, is amazing. So long after his death, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But it's been a long time. I mean, he would have been 100 this year.
Wow.
His birthday was in June.
Yep.
For him to still be so relevant and referred to is amazing.
I know he talked yesterday, your brother, he's the quarterback's coach of the Saints. What exactly are some of the things that people say when you tell them that you're not exactly a full-fledged, diehard Packers fan?
Some people, find it ridiculous that I'm not. I was born in St. Paul, Minnesota. My parents both went to college in that area, and I lived there until I was 8. Obviously, when I was 3-4 years old, I didn't really understand who my grandfather was in the big scheme of things. So, I saw the Vikings as a kid and was a huge Fran Tarkenton fan. I mean, Chuck Foreman was I wanted to be Chuck Foreman. I wanted to be a running back when I was a kid. Then my dad got a job with the Seahawks when I was 8. And, hopefully all kids adore and respect and look up to their father. So that became my team, the Seahawks. And I worked for the Browns and the Titans in my 20s. And, again, like you said, my brother's the coach of the Saints. It's just difficult, I guess, in a way for me to be a true diehard Packer fan due to all the conflicting loyalties I have. I like to see them do well. I root for them. To win, it's good for the town. I think it's good for football for the Packers to be a contender. I'm not. My two youngest kids are diehard Packer fans.
Okay.
I was born in Green Bay. I coincidentally had a job there completely, I guess, separate from my grandfather, and my dad hasn't lived there, grown up there. My dad just got a job there, lived there for 5 years, both my youngest two of my four were born there, and they're big Packer fans. So I get to kind of vicariously root through them, or for the team through them, but, you know, I pull more from my brother than I do from my grandfather. So the Saints are the team that I like to see do the best.
Okay. So hypothetically, go ahead.
You know, people think it's ridiculous that I'm not a Packer fan, but it's complicated.
Well, no, I mean, not at all. I mean, obviously, you know, your brother's a coach. So if the Saints are playing the Packers, you're kind of put in a precarious situation there.
Was it 2 years ago? They opened the season,
yep.
And my dad came to town. I flew out, attended the game with two of my friends from college, and we got tickets for my brother, so we were in the Saints section, which wasn't too bad, but I did have a Saints culture on during that game, and Packer fans are really good about, you know, they'll give you a little bit of the business if you're walking around in the opposing team's garb, but it's not like Philly or New York where you got to be a little worried. Packer fans are pretty good about that, but I've pulled for my brother before all else.
That's cool. I know yesterday we talked about the quarterback play. What was it that you said yesterday that Vince made the comment about quarterbacks? I think you said they're too important. What was that he said that you said yesterday?
Yeah, and again, this is I'm paraphrasing, but he said that football was the perfect game with the exception of the quarterback. He had too much responsibility. He was too important in the grand scheme of things. If he had a bad game or you did not have a top flight quarterback, you suffered, I guess, exponentially over any other position. And you look at any highlight, you look at any news report, the quarterback is usually the lead or the number one person who has an impact on the game, so in a way he's right. And if you've got a good one like Aaron Rodgers or Manning or Drew Brees, well then you've really got an advantage over some of the teams who either has young quarterbacks or some that are kind of more in the middle or hopefully not near the bottom of the rankings, because it makes things difficult in that sport.
Do you think it's a generalized rule? Because obviously, you know, Baltimore, when they had Trent Dilfer, they were still able to win with a solid defense. I mean, what I'm asking is you can make up for elite quarterback play with by having other good areas on your team, right?
True, true. But I think, that's more the exception than the rule.
Okay, all right.
You look at the teams that just didn't take the last 4 or 5, Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers, Joe Flacco won last year. I'm sure some people would dispute whether or not he is an elite quarterback.
Yeah.
He definitely played at an elite level in the playoffs. Eli Manning, 2 times the Giants with the Super Bowl. He made plays, elite plays. Arguably one of the best quarterbacks ever, Tom Brady, in those games, pretty much outplayed him.
Mm-hmm.
Does it necessarily mean you've got to have an elite quarterback every second of every game? Not necessarily. But you've got to have one at least, to make the playoffs, and then in the playoffs they've got to play at that level. Coincidentally, when the Colts won the Super Bowl, Peyton Manning had a pretty average performance.
Yeah.
In those playoffs, which is kind of ironic, with the way he's played over his career, played the last 4 games of this season. But it's a lot easier. Let's put it that way. You could take A-Rod, Aaron Rodgers, or Brees, or Manning, or very few of them could compete at the level they do if you substituted someone for them. And again, you lose a left tackle like the Packers did, they just, okay, if they lost Aaron Rodgers, I'd fear for their record.
Where would you, John, where would you, oh, sorry, where would you rank Bart Starr, Aaron Rodgers, and Brett Favre among the Packers' pantheons of quarterbacks?
Well, I guess it would depend on what you were grading them on. You look at, what is the one thing that Dan Marino never did? He never won a championship. What's the one thing that Bart Starr did that really no other quarterback did do is he won five. So if you were to rank him on, who was the most effective, who won the most championships, you'd have to put Bart Starr at the top. You couldn't put Bart Starr at the top for athletic ability, for quarterback play, as we see today, and he would probably be the first one to admit that. He wasn't asked to do the things that Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers was asked to do. The game was different. They didn't throw the ball as much. The one thing I think Rodgers and Bart Starr have in common is they do not make the critical turnovers that cost teams games. The Bengals game was a rarity for Aaron Rodgers. They have multiple turnovers. That was one thing Brett did very well in a negative way. He did commit some of those turnovers at inopportune times, which cost the team games. Watson Favre was, for me, the most fun. And I think he's got a ton of records and accomplished one more game than any other quarterback. So, to compare them is kind of to do a disservice to the three of them.
Okay.
I will say, other than the four games that Peyton Manning's played this year, over the last 3 or 4 years, Aaron Rodgers has probably been the best quarterback of his era. His ability to put the ball where it needs to be, to escape the rush and make plays with his feet, and to avoid costly turnovers is amazing.
Okay.
I think the Packers have achieved a lot more than the overall team could ever achieve because Aaron Rodgers is just that good. When Tom Brady went down a couple years ago, Matt Castle came in and they won 10 games. They probably would have won more with Brady. I don't think the Packers are that kind of team. I think if they had to go to their backup, if anyone thinks they would win 10 games, they're dreaming.
I agree. Yeah, because
if you had to rank them by, why do they play the game? And that's to win the final game of the year. You'd have to put Bart Starr at the top.
Okay. All right.
That's what he was tasked with doing, and he won it. To watch Aaron Rodgers in some games though is amazing. It takes my breath away sometimes to see some of the plays he makes.
Do you agree with what some people have been writing nationally? People are saying the rules that have been changed kind of affecting physical play in the NFL have kind of quote-unquote wussified the game. Do you agree with that, John, and all, or not?
I don't know if I would say wussified the game. They definitely have made it easier to pass the ball across the middle. It's not as dangerous. It's not as difficult. The player's not going to take the hits, and I think you see teams attacking the middle. In that Monday night football game, the Saints did amazing things in the middle of the field. I don't know if it's a question of guys are just bigger, faster, and stronger than they were, even 10 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, that something has to be done. I don't think they have any choice. I mean, the liability is just too great for them to continue and ignore it. I go back to my early days at Pop Warner in high school and how we learned to tackle. And I think if you do it that way, there's really not a whole chance, much of a chance, of you getting hurt from a concussion or something of that nature. But these, flying body shots were just the momentum. They had to do something. The game has changed throughout its whole history, and coaches have had to adapt, and right now it looks like the offenses are adapting a little better than the defenses, but I would not put it beyond the defenses that they will catch up. I mean, they're always going to throw the ball more than they did in the past just because the rules have been loosened up to make that much easier than it used to be. Primarily, you know, the five-yard chuck rule is probably the most impactful, but now that you just can't, safeties can't hit guys coming across the middle like they used to, definitely opened up the game.
So do you think maybe that's maybe kids are being taught incorrectly perhaps at the youth levels, flag football, high school, maybe even parts of college?
Well, it's kind of like you look at basketball and baseball, the highlights, I mean, it's the dunk, it's the home run. And the NFL's done this, NFL Films has all these videos of, the greatest hits of all time. And, ESPN had that the highlight that they used to do where it was just the big hits. And, I'm not blaming TV or highlight shows, but, I mean, that's what gets eyeballed, and that's what causes everyone to get really fired up with some of those huge hits. I know there's a lot of people out there, there's organizations like USA Football and the NFL are putting a lot of money behind, teaching the proper way to tackle. I was fortunate to have a great coaching staff when I was in high school. They've got one here at St. Francis, which we're about to go to and do the ceremony. The guy's been there 61 years.
Wow.
So I see guys like Bill Simmons and some of these other people who speculate that 20 years football will either not be what we know it to be, or it will be gone due to the injuries, the liability, and the concussions. I'm not that pessimistic, because I think they will adjust as they have. Before they didn't have helmets, then they went to leather helmets, then they went to face masks, then they went to padded helmets, and all of these advancements and changes they've made. The coaches and players have adjusted, and I'm sure they'll adjust to this.
Go ahead. Besides your brother, who's the quarterback's coach for the Saints, and what coaching stops have you made, John?
Out of college, I worked in the World League, which later became NFL Europe. I did that for 2 years. Then I was a lowly scouting assistant for the Browns, 91, 92, 93, 2 years total, but it spanned those seasons. When Coach Belichick was there, then I went to Vanderbilt as a graduate assistant in 95. And then when the Oilers moved to Nashville, I ended up getting a job with them, and after they transitioned to the Titans, I worked for them for a couple of years, and then I got married, and the football lifestyle just didn't suit me as a father.
Okay.
As a husband first, and then ultimately a little over a year after we got married as a father, so that's the extent of it for me. It was about 9 or 10 years I worked in football.
Okay. Any other Lombardis besides your brother still in the coaching ranks at all, or no?
Not my brothers and sisters. My older brother is the assistant U.S. attorney in Seattle. My sister, who's younger than me, works at Microsoft. And then Joe, who's the baby, he coaches. My old roommate's Jim Schwartz.
Yep.
We roomed together for a couple years. We both worked together in the Titans, or the Browns. So he's coming down this weekend. Mike Lombardi, who's the GM of the Browns now, was my boss when I worked for the Browns. So I'm always pulling for him. I got to say I pulled for Schwartzy to win because we've been friends for 20 years now. Makes it difficult when they play the Packers. To root for him. I really don't root for him. I just hope he does well because he's a good guy, in spite of what people say about him. He's a good guy.
He's just been hamstrung with a tough team.
They're scattered here and there, a couple other guys there was a time where there were two offices when I worked in Cleveland, and one of them was Schwartz. The other one was Scott Pioli, who just, was with the Chiefs as the general manager, and then George Kokinas was general manager of the Browns for a while, now works for the Ravens.
Okay.
The four of us kind of all had, I won't say we're not on the same level, but the four of us were all in the scouting department, doing kind of the grunt work, And those four guys, or three guys, have all gone out to me. I just punched out. So sometimes I wonder if I'd stay in, what would happen. But that's the past.
Okay, kind of give me a quick overview of your family, John. You said you were 46 yesterday?
Yeah, 46 years old. I just turned 46 in August.
Okay.
My wife, Barbara, we've been married 14 years now. My oldest daughter, Megan, just turned 13 Friday. My second daughter, Katie, is 11. I've got an 8-year-old daughter, Riley, who will be 9 on Friday. And on the 6th, whatever day the 6th is. And then my son, Jack, just turned 6 on Friday. He and his older sister have the same birthday.
Okay.
So, with the four of them.
When people you know, see or realize that your last name is Lombardi, do they get the gumption to ask you, hey, are you possibly related to Vince, or do you think that question is going to eventually come, like possibly like in an airport or something?
Well, you know, the guy went through my driver's license in Nashville yesterday. I was flying up here, and he looked at me and goes, John Lombardi. And you know, I kind of figured he was about to ask, because people do ask. You know, it's not every person, but I get asked it, you know, once, twice a week. Usually they go, any relation? And, you know, sometimes I'm like, who? Or, you know, I don't want to be too presumptuous if they're talking about my grandfather, but,
yeah,
you know, who else could they be talking about? Common response, of course, is yes. He's my grandfather. And about half the people who ask don't believe me.
Seriously?
Or, you know, give me the, get out of here, really? You know, or, oh, no, really? You know, sort of my brain, I'm thinking, well, why'd you ask me if you didn't, you know, if you weren't going to believe that, you know. But for me, it's really an accident of birth. I contributed nothing to what my grandfather accomplished. I'm just happy to be related to him and be part of it and get to do things like this, you know. It's very exciting. Yeah, the weirdest thing is I did have a girl, a friend of a girl I was dating who was from Appleton, Wisconsin, who repeatedly told me that she wanted to bear my children. All her friends in Wisconsin would think that was the greatest thing ever. Obviously, she wasn't serious. At least I hope she wasn't serious. But she said it all the time, and it was a little bit uncomfortable. But that's about the weirdest. She...
you know, for the people that don't believe you, do you then go into a diatribe of trying to explain and try to make them believe that you are, in fact, you know, Vince's grandson, or do you just kind of forget about it?
It depends. More than once, they suggested related to Vince, and I go, the coach? And I, yeah, he's my grandfather. He goes, he's also my dad. I have a brother named Vince and I have a nephew named Vince. So, but yeah, I'm not going to obviously go out of my way to convince them of who I am.
Okay.
I've been asked, you know, well, let me see your driver's license. I said, well, we'll not show you. That just gives you my name. It doesn't say related to Vince on my driver's license. I have gone so far as to get on my phone and, you know, Google it. And there are some pictures on there of me and my grandfather when I was little. But that, you know, that's been 2 or 3 times just to prove it, because they do get a little, no way, come on, no way, really? No way. What, you want me to prove it?
That's funny.
And they're like, yes. I said, okay, give me, let me check my phone here. So, yeah, but, you know, mostly it's not a big deal.
Cool. And lastly, I know I asked you this yesterday, but your favorite Vince Lombardi quote?
It's the one where he said, leaders are not born, they are made, and they are made like all good things through hard work. And again, I probably don't have that 100% down, but I've always liked that idea that my grandfather was big. everybody on that, that nothing comes easy. You've got to work hard and do what's necessary, both on and off the field, to be successful. And consequently, I just like that one.
All right.
It kind of fits in with the American ideal of you are what you make yourself.
Cool. Oh, John, one more thing. What are you doing now? What are you doing for a living?
I work for a general contractor.
Okay.
I'm the operations manager in the Nashville, Middle Tennessee area.
Okay.
We focus primarily on foundation repair.
Okay.
And waterproofing basements and things of that nature. Your company built homes for a long time and did some general construction, but last 12 years they focused on things below the first floor.
Oh.
Have problems, and it's a good niche to be in.
Okay.
Not a lot of people do that, and there's a lot of problems down there.
Okay, a lot of sandy soil where foundations kind of sink in, probably, or.
Well, we got more clay where we are. Which,
okay.
You know, it gets wet, it expands. When it gets dry, it contracts. And we've got a lot of crawl spaces in Middle Tennessee.
Oh.
Crawl spaces are about as foolish a thing to deal with in a house as it could possibly be.
Okay.
You've got a dark, cool, damp environment below your house. It's not a good cocktail.
No. And I'm guessing most of those homes are quite old.
Say again?
I'm guessing most of those homes are quite old.
I don't understand. I can't really make out the last word.
I'm guessing most of the homes are quite old. They're not very new.
Well, you know, surprisingly, you see a lot of problems with older homes because it's just, you know, the wear and tear. But we do quite a bit of stuff. We've actually got a house. I didn't go to it myself, but some of the other guys will have it. It's not even a year old, and it's already having problems.
Wow.
Yeah, it really doesn't have much. It doesn't have as much to do with the house itself. Obviously, if your house is poorly built, it'll result in problems. It has everything to do with the soil that you build the house on.
Okay.
If that's not competent, the word we use, then you're going to have foundation issues.
Hmm.
Whether it's, it does obviously take some time for it to settle, but it could be 5 years old or 50 years old.
Oh.
If the soil, and over time, you know, with rain and erosion, you can develop problems and it becomes less competent. But if you build a house on bad soil, it could develop problems real early.
Okay.
And if you don't do your drainage correctly around the house, it's going to leak, whether it's a year old or 50 years old.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Cool. All right, John. Hey, I wish you all the luck today in the ceremony. Once again, thanks a lot for calling me back. I'm sorry that I was a complete idiot yesterday, so and forgot to record.
No, I interned for a year in college at a radio station, and I did that more than once.
So hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you being so candid and nice. So that was really, really, really nice.
Thank you. No problem. I look forward to talking to you soon, and good luck with everything.
All right. Thanks, John. Take care.
Thanks,
everyone.
Thanks, Samantha.